You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is BFM 89.9. I'm speaking to Scott W. Ventrella, lecturer, coach, consultant, educator, and author of The Power of Positive Thinking in Business. What prompted you to write this book based on Norman Vincent Peale's classic?
Well, Frida, when I was in high school, I read Norman Vincent Peale's original, The Power of Positive Thinking, and it had a profound effect on me. It really, you know, it changed my life, and I wanted to give back, and I wanted also to help Mrs. Peale, after Norman's death, to perpetuate that message and that legacy.
And are positive thinkers the same as optimistic people?
Well, let me put it this way. All positive thinkers are optimistic. All optimists are not necessarily positive thinkers because there's so much more to being a positive thinker than just being optimistic.
And what are the misconceptions about positive thinkers?
Well, some people think that positive thinking or a positive thinker is, there's a term that some people might be familiar with. It's called a Pollyanna. That means somebody who has an unrealistic view of the world or a situation. And that's the misperception, that people think that a positive thinker they smile through any kind of adversity and do not address the issues or the challenges, when in fact nothing more could be truer of a positive thinker. They do meet the problems head on. We tend not to be buried by those problems. We need to, you know, work smart and work our faith and see the problems all the way through, rather than, you know, sweeping them under the carpet.
Are there other misconceptions around positive thinkers?
Well, some people might think of positive thinkers as maybe not being, maybe being a little bit too meek, maybe not having, a force of character, or and the misconception there is that positive thinkers are generally humble. Yet another one of the 10 traits is confidence, which is, you know, very, very evident in a positive thinker. So you can be confident and you can also be humble at the same time. So the misconception, again, is that people might think that a positive thinker is maybe weak or weak-minded, when, and again, nothing more could be. It's actually the opposite. There's a great confidence.
Or always a nice guy.
Situations, people.
Or always,
yeah,
a nice
not
guy.
Always. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And again, you could. I remember years ago when dealing with the Soviet Union, they talked with Gorbachev. They would say, you know, he has a nice smile, but the teeth are made of iron. So in other words, I kind of like a positive thinker. In other words, you could have you could be nice, you could be accommodating, you could be pleasant with people, but also be firm in your convictions and steadfast also and persevering.
And what are the costs of being negative in the business world, and is it measurable?
Yeah, actually, in the United States, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics does have some measures. Now, the last I had checked, it was around $3 billion, and that is measured mostly, of course, through productivity. Productivity is output per man hour, I should say. And so how does negative thinking interfere with productivity? I think anybody listening to this can relate to a situation, maybe a coworker, a disgruntled coworker, where they're literally, you know, not paying attention to their job. It involves gossip. It might even involve, in some cases, a sabotage or writing nasty emails, or just kind of, you know, if there's negativity comes in a lot of different forms. Some people might just be disgruntled at a coworker, or maybe at a boss, or maybe even at the company for laying off people, especially in today's economic times. So people generally, when they're in a negative mode, when they're in a negative situation, some people will actually pull back and not work as hard and do other things that could be very distracting. It could also hurt the goodwill with clients. Maybe they're not giving a sharp customer service. All that can be measured as well, in terms of maybe loss of business, or just cutting back. Maybe customers are not buying, purchasing as much. Customer service can be dramatically impacted through negativity.
And is there a cost to this?
There is a cost. As mentioned, it all converts into dollars. When you lose a customer, you're losing sales. You're losing revenue. When you have an employee that is not paying attention to their job because they are they're upset. They're behaving in a negative way. Well, that's a loss of productivity. All of that can be measured in dollars, and in some cases, it results. Negativity can result in false sick days. You know, people just not showing up, calling in sick when in fact they're healthy. All those have a cost, obviously, to the company.
How does the mind work, and how do you make it positive?
Yeah, here's the neat thing about positive thinking is, some people, this is another misconception about positive thinking. Some people say or think or believe very strongly that, you're either born a positive thinker or you're not. Well, one of the things, a breakthrough at least in the research that I looked at actually shows and supports the notion that we are all innately born positive thinkers. Now, that's a surprise to a lot of people. I remember one time I had somebody come up to me. I was running a seminar on positive thinking in business, and they said, well, you know what? This is great for some people, but, my husband, for instance, he was born a negative thinker, so he'll always be a negative thinker. Well, again, that's a misconception. We are all innately positive. Now, what happens, back to your question, what happens is that for a lot of reasons, we may move away from that innate positiveness, and we may find ourselves around situations or people that are negative, and maybe it we kind of drift in that direction. So the good news is that we can actually we can relearn how to be positive, or let's say reacquire those positive traits. And you do that through first understanding how the mind works. Now, this was a great contribution by a Harvard professor many years ago, Dr. William James, who came up with this discovery, and truly was a big discovery in the field of psychology at the time, that we think first, then we have feelings, and then as a result of those feelings, there are actions. And, of course, there's always consequences to our actions. Now, why is this such a big discovery in terms of how the mind works and how it relates to positive thinking and negative thinking? Many people think that, take an incident of road rage, and somebody says, well, what were you thinking when you cut off that driver? Well, I wasn't thinking anything. I just felt angry, and so I decided to cut them off or give them some kind of a derogatory hand signal, something like that. Well, James, in The Power of This Model, says, wait a minute, no. Feelings don't come out of nothingness. In the words of Emerson, the thought is the predecessor to the deed. In other words, we think things first, and that happens in our own mind in the form of self-talk. So we have an event, let's say somebody cuts us off or somebody takes credit for a good work on a project at work, and so we have these thoughts. And if the thoughts are immediately negative, then we're going to have negative feelings, anger, let's say, and if we're angry, we're likely to behave. All thought ultimately manifests in a behavior. We're likely to behave verbally or otherwise in a negative way, and then, of course, there's a negative consequence. So the way the model works, the way this concept works, is we can change from that negative position to the positive situation position, and that's simply by reframing. So the same situation, but rather than awfulizing it and going down that negative route, we simply think through our self-talk. We think positive thoughts about that, and positive thoughts will always yield positive feelings. Positive feelings will result in positive behavior, and there are consequences of those behaviors, so we'll have a positive consequence. And I think most anybody listening to this can think of a time when they wished that they could have taken back something that they had said or done in a moment of anger. Why not be proactive and just simply reframe? You have a choice. You can either take, you know, option A or option B. You cannot change the situation, but you can change your reaction to that situation. Why not, with some forethought and proactivity, choose that positive path?
So whenever we're about to behave badly, to stop and think and reframe before we do or say anything.
That's absolutely correct. And this is not just the, you know, hold your breath for 10 seconds and just blow off steam or go into a closet and shout and scream. Not at all. It is truly thinking, you know, take the situation where somebody has maybe taken credit for the good work that you did. It's really just thinking, okay, listen, is this the worst thing that can happen in the world? There are far other, many terrible things that can happen in the world. This is not so terrible. Maybe the person is insecure, or maybe they were just negligent. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I believe that, you know, people are generally good and they want to do the right thing. Maybe they're going through things that I don't even know about. They were preoccupied. So, see, you can see how that versus, well, that dirty, rotten son of a gun, you know, they're doing this to me. They're undermining me. They're sabotaging me. They're trying to make themselves look good. Versus me, you can see the tone is different. And once you can establish that positive tone, you're going to feel okay about it. And maybe your action, instead of just being resentful or fuming, or maybe even trying to get back at them, maybe you will confront them, but you'll do it in a way that is much more positive. Hey, you know, I'd like to talk to you about, you know, that situation, you know, the project, and I just wanted to, you know, share with you, you know, some of my thoughts and feelings about, you know, how the credit who was given credit, and just tell me a little bit more about that. I'd really appreciate that. So you see, it's just a different tone. You can't change the situation, but you can certainly reframe your thoughts.
And we've heard of goals, affirmations, and visualization. Do they work in isolation, or do they need to be done together?
They can be done in isolation, and if you really want a powerful effect, you can work them all three together. And if you don't mind, Farida, I'd like to just take a minute just to kind of give a quick snapshot on what each one of those are.
Of course.
Would that be okay?
Yep, that's fine.
With the goals, I advocate the SMART method. Now, that's an acronym that stands for, when you set a goal, it should be specific and measurable. Action-oriented, it should be realistic, and it should be time-bound. So in other words, you know, have a specific date, have quantities, you know, measures. It is very difficult to know if you've achieved something if there are no specific kinds of measures. So studies show that those people who actually have and write down, very key, write down a SMART goal is much more likely to achieve that goal. Now, an affirmation is a very positive statement about the achieving that goal, and it's written in. I'm thinking about the time I ran my first marathon in New York City, and instead of, you know, just listen to these words and tell me if you can pick up on the difference. Instead of saying something like "I will not fail," "I will not fail," "I will not fail," some people say, "Well, that's an affirmation. That's a good affirmation." How about this? I am succeeding. I am succeeding. I am succeeding. Can you hear the difference?
Yes.
I will not fail versus I am succeeding. Essentially, you're saying the same thing. But with the I will not fail, that is actually not a good affirmation because, first of all, you're using a negative word, and the subconscious mind picks up on that. It hears fail, 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 fail. With I am succeeding, two things are happening. You've got a positive word, succeed, and instead of saying I will, you're saying I am, as if it were done. You're in the process of achieving that goal. So affirmations are very important. It's the next level of goal setting. You're not changing the goal. You're simply rewriting it, stating it in the positive, stating it as if it were already done. If you use the word like will, you're leaving a doubt in your own mind. And then finally, the visualization is literally seeing in your mind's eye the accomplishment of whatever that goal is. For me, running the marathon, it was finishing, you know, crossing the finish line, and you can sit in the comfort of your own living room and visualize whatever goal might be, whatever the goal might be. It could be a short term or even a long term. It could be a personal or a professional goal. But if your big dream is to be the chief executive officer of a major corporation, naturally you have to have a plan to do that. You can't just think it and then it'll happen. You actually have to have obviously some steps that'll get you there. But you'd actually see yourself in that position and behaving in that particular role, whatever it might be. You paint a very vivid picture. One other thing I want to mention with the affirmation: write them down. Write them down and repeat them. This is like a doctor's prescription: 3 times a day, and 10 times each time. You can say it. It's best to say it out loud. If you're around people, then say it silently to yourself. But whatever that affirmation is, and again, this is not. This is based in behavioral science. Your subconscious mind. The more you can repeat it, the more your subconscious mind will not only register it, but your subconscious mind actually is responsible for most of the behavior that takes place. So what you're really doing is at a very deep, you are now, in a sense, programming yourself, your subconscious mind, for the eventuality of the achievement of that particular goal.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station. You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
I'm speaking to Scott W. Ventrella, the author of The Power of Positive Thinking in Business. You're listening to BFM 89.9. What are the 10 traits of a positive thinker you outlined in your book?
The 10 traits are as follows, and I've actually grouped them into 4 categories. First is the centering power, and just think about that. Before you take any action, you want to be centered. And the 3 traits associated with centering power is integrity. You want to act with an integrity, and you want to be very well grounded in your own personal values and your value system. I call it a platinum standard. Another trait associated with the centering power is belief, a belief in yourself, a belief in others. And for those who have this idea of a higher power, let's say, it's a belief in a higher spiritual power, however they might, an individual might define that. Then there's focus, which is, really understanding what you're going after and laying out that plan. That's the centering power. Next is the driving power, and there are 3 traits associated with driving power. Now you've got your plan, you're grounded, and you're moving. And with that driving power, you need courage, confidence, and determination. Courage, confidence, and determination that sees you through the accomplishment of whatever the task might be. Now, there are times when we have things that get in our way. We have people that say that are naysayers. They say, well, that's not possible, or you can't do this, you can't do that. That's when we need to use our uplifting power. And there are 2 traits associated with that. That is enthusiasm and optimism. And there are times when we feel beaten down, or we feel that we're being blocked every turn that we take. That's where, for example, an optimist, it's not only feeling really good about where we are and what we're doing when everything is working in our favor, it's when those roadblocks are put up in front of us, when the challenges and adversity comes, we're still able to hold on to the belief in what we're doing. And from deep down within, we're able to get that energy to keep moving. And then finally, there are 2 other traits that are associated with what I call the holding power. There are times, and by the way, In most cultures, people just don't like it, but there are times when you have to wait. That's patience and calmness. The 2 traits associated with holding power is patience and calmness.
All right. And in your book as well, you provided techniques and ways to awaken long dormant traits. I have an issue with patience. What tips can you provide for patience?
Well, so you don't feel alone. We do actually have an assessment. It's the positive thinking inventory that will assess where an individual can assess against those 10 traits. And patience across the board, whether I'm dealing with graduate students, coaching clients, executives in major corporations, they generally always score fairly low. With a couple of quick tips on building patience. First of all, the root to the word comes from the Latin root is patite, or to suffer. And isn't that appropriate, Frida? To suffer. So first of all, to understand, are there times, you know, is our impatience situational? Because sometimes we can become very impatient because we're tired, because maybe we have a bias against somebody, or there's just a lack of interest. We could be, you know, people who are not feeling well through sickness. Some people, just the way they're wired, their personality, they're, you know, a type A type person that's very impatient. So first of all, it's good to understand, well, you know, if I'm only impatient when I'm really tired, I need to look at the root cause, which is maybe, you know, fatigue, and the remedy is I need to get more sleep, or I've just got too much going on. Another thing is, though, that many people who are impatient, they take things very personally. They're kind of hardwired in a sense that way, that you know, they just have to have things done, and they have to have things done, you know, immediately. So it's just to kind of, you know, take a step back and take a bigger view of the situation and of life in general. You'd be surprised at how sometimes just taking that step back, and that's why, by the way, I combine patience with calmness, because the two are really closely, very closely connected. Just to be able to take time from the busyness of life and step away and simply not take things so personally. Another thing is keeping busy. You know, when you're in line behind a bunch of people, whether in an automobile or in a shopping store or something like that, is just to make sure you have something else to do. When I'm at an airport, I always bring extra reading material. Because if you dwell on being impatient and the long lines and the delays, it's going to do nothing but aggravate you. So make sure you have plenty that will keep you busy. And also writing an affirmation, write an affirmation about being patient. Not about overcoming impatience, but write a nice positive affirmation around patience and begin to work that every day. That's a very powerful technique. In my workshop, I use some caricatures of famous people when it comes to relating to each one of these traits. And for patience, I use Nelson Mandela, because he sat in that prison for, you know, my gosh, years and years and years, and just stayed steadfast because, and this is another tip for staying patient, making sure that you remember, or reminding yourself of the big picture, what that goal is. And because some people get very impatient, for instance, with their job, and they say, well, you know, I'm going to go look for something else. I'm not getting anywhere here. Well, you know what? Maybe there's a bigger purpose you can attach it to, and maybe there's a reason why you should be suffering, the root to patience, to suffer. Maybe there's a reason. So sometimes if you can attach it to some higher purpose, a greater vision, a grander vision, that can also be very, very helpful.
I will be calm and peaceful. If someone has read...
That will. I am. I am more patient. I am more calm. I had to do that.
Thanks for the tip. And if someone...
It's a little subtlety, but it's a powerful one.
And if someone has read Norman Vincent Peale's classic, The Power of Positive Thinking, what value will they get from reading your book?
Well, this was not just the Power of Positive Thinking in Business is not just a refreshed version of Dr. Peale's original. And I did work with Norman Vincent Peale's organization. I worked directly at the time under his widow, Ruth Stafford Peale, and the family. This is a complete rewrite that was and applied to the business environment. So not only and Dr. Peel didn't talk about the 10 traits. I actually did much greater research around all of his writings. He published 30 or 40 books and numerous sermons and videotapes. He was just world-renowned at that time. So there, you'll get a much broader treatment of what a positive thinker is. You'll get many more tips associated with those with each one of those traits, and also you'll be able to contextualize that in the setting of a business corporate environment. The original book was really written for the individual, and it was also there was a very heavy spiritual / faith based component, which this has a little bit of. But I needed to be careful as we were bringing not only these concepts via book, but also through workshop into major publicly held corporations. So we had to be very careful. You know, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale was a Methodist minister. There's a very Judeo-Christian underpinning to all of, and in fact, positive thinking is shorthand for faith. That was supposed to be the original title of his book, but the editors at that time in the 1950s decided that positive thinking would actually do
better
in the marketplace. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But very the idea of faith and a strong belief in the Judeo-Christian tradition is very prevalent in the original, and you'll find some pieces of that in The Power of Positive Thinking in Business.
And where can people get more information about your work and your book?
Probably the best place is my website, which is www.positivedynamics.com. All one word, positivedynamics.com. And then, of course, Amazon, all major book sellers, and especially now electronically, I believe still have the book. It's published in probably 25 or more countries. So it's not just a Western concept. It's published just in places I would have never believed it. And also, by the way, there's I recently, just a few years ago, published a book, Me, Inc., Me Incorporated, How to Master the Business of Being You. Some people might be interested in that as well. That's more about managing your life personally and professionally.
I've been speaking to Scott W. Ventrella, author of The Power of Positive Thinking in Business. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.